From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
A famous gardener who Ken Drews and I know often says this one-liner, anyone can do spring. What he means is, and then what happens after that? What happens after the current tender, colorful parade of beauty with flowers everywhere and fresh green foliage expanding by the minute without our effort is up to us gardeners. And that's the harder part. That's our topic today, Ken's and mine, what to do next to keep the garden going strong for the long haul. But first, these messages.
Programming and underwriting support from Brushwood Nursery. For more than 20 years, Brushwood Nursery has shipped the finest selection of clematis and other vines all over the United States with full gallon-sized plant and free shipping. Their website is full of beautiful pictures and information on growing clematis. Brushwoodnursery.com. Programming and underwriting support from Garden Tool Company. Garden Tool Company's wide selection of heirloom quality tools for your gardening passion is backed by outstanding customer service, fast shipping, and ongoing support. GardenToolCompany.com.
Ken Drews needs no introduction to all of you except to say he's been my go-to garden friend for decades, is the author of an amazing 20 books, all of which I have read and have. And he joins me once each month on the show, including again today. Hi, Ken.
Hi, Margaret.
Happy spring.
Thank you. You know, the last time we talked, how many comments did you get?
Oh, my goodness. I don't know. It was like 500 or something.
Something like that.
Yeah, a lot of pent-up garden energy out there. And actually, I was going to ask you, speaking of that and this strange year that we're in, have you been to a garden center yet this spring?
No.
And so I want to say I've heard from a lot of people, including in some of those comments that you just alluded to, you know, about lack of availability of seeds first, because all the seed companies got overwhelmed, yeah, and then of plants and so forth. And, you know, in the trade press, which I read every week, the independent garden centers around the country are trying to be deemed essential with safety rules in order. And in many states they are. Some states they're not. It's changing by the minute. But a lot have curbside pickup, a lot of the independent, you know, your local family-owned garden centers. So I think it's worth calling, certainly looking at their websites and calling. My local place has been amazing to drop bagged, even deliver bagged goods or throw them right in your trunk if you want to pop by with a prepaid order. So it takes some investigating, but I want to support these businesses. And plus, I need certain things, you know, to do some of the projects that I'm doing here.
So. Right. What you need is another deadline, right? And now people can find you either online or in the print version of the New York Times twice a week. Oh,
yeah.
My gosh. In spring with everything else.
That started the week of, like, the last week of April or the next to last week of April. I know, it's crazy. Out of the blue. So that's something new. But yes, so I'm busy. But I'm also, as we've talked about before, like you are, taking advantage of this year when people are not visiting the garden to, you know, do some chores I've put off for a while when I'm usually busy getting ready for tours. So
I'm glad that people are not visiting the garden here, because in April, the third week of April, it was in the 20s, and the hostas were up because the winter was so warm. And so many things have been, let's say, set back. I think some things maybe have been killed.
Toast.
But I don't know what's going to happen. And I was thinking, at least nobody's coming.
Yeah. No, I know. A lot of stuff in the mornings here at that same period of time. We're lying down, you know, frozen solid icicles. So I don't know what will rebound and what won't. But I wasn't as advanced as you. So it's the first week of May or thereabouts. And depending where people are living, it may be peak mid-spring or peak late spring or whatever, north to south and so forth. But there's a lot of colorful stuff going on everywhere outdoors, flowering shrubs, trees, bulbs, perennials. So people did their spring cleanup, or they're doing it, and they're like, okay, I've done that, check. But that's not the end of the story. So I thought we could go through sort of some of the things that you and I, after a million years of gardening, have learned sort of aftercare that really help the garden to look good right into the summer and beyond. So do you want to start with like bulbs, for instance? Because those are one of the big features of spring.
Well, I think that your listeners know that by now, that you don't cut off the daffodil foliage, you don't mow them if they're in the lawn, which is kind of too bad because it's hard to get around it, and you don't braid them. When was the last time you saw braided daffodil foliage?
It's been a long time. I haven't in a long time, but I used to see people do it, you know.
Yeah. But I have seen people who planted daffodils in the lawn for that lovely English look and then mowed the lawn, and they wonder why they don't have any flowers anymore.
Right, right, right. So here, I'm in zone 5B. I don't even mow. I have big amounts of them in sort of grassy areas. And I don't even mow those areas until around July 4th. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I really let them go their own all the way down to beige.
And maybe if you have species tulips, that some of them come back every year. Most tulips don't come back every year, for me anyway, even the species. But if you have species tulips, you want to leave the foliage. You want to leave the foliage of all the bulbs, and most of them will tell you it's over. Like the allium, the allium are blooming and their foliage is ugly and turning yellow at the same time. And so it's pretty much over after they bloom.
Right, right. So I let them ripen, as we would say. I let them do their thing and take advantage of their photosynthesis process before I clean them up. So that's super important.
And when they're turning yellow, that's when you do it.
Right.
Or when they're yellow.
Right. And one other tip, I think, with some of the little guys, like one of my favorites is the winter aconite, Aranthus hyemalis. Mm-hmm. And, you know, tiny little first bulb to bloom with the snowdrops here for me, even March where I am sometimes, yellow, tiny flowers. It's hard to establish, but when it does get established, the way it likes to establish itself and get into a bigger and bigger mass is by seeding.
Right.
And so you don't want to disturb that area when the flowers are spent. You know what I mean? Make a mess, clean up too roughly, because you'll miss out on that colonizing effect that the self-sowing is going to do. So,
and it takes a long time.
It does.
And then surprise, but it takes a long time because I believe that those seeds need to go, they take 2 years to germinate. They have to go through warm, moist, cold, moist, warm, moist, you know, the whole thing like that.
Wow.
And I think it is 2 years to germinate. So, but you know, it's one of those things in the garden. You don't stand there tapping your foot waiting to see the colony take off. You just go away, and then a scant 7 years later, you have a nice big clump.
Yeah.
Or colony.
Yeah. So flowering shrubs are another hallmark of spring. And oh my goodness, I mean, you know, we could name so many that we adore. And the question always arises, you know, do I have to deadhead them? I've been getting from people more southern than I am, I've already been getting like, do I have to deadhead my rhodies? Do I have to deadhead my, you know, fill in the blank, right?
Camellia.
So yeah, camellias for more southerly people, exactly. You know, and that sort of dot is like also sort of when to prune them, when is the right time to prune them. So maybe let's talk about, if you can imagine, fast forward in your garden a little bit, like some things that you do tidy up, don't tidy up in the shrub department, you know, kind of how it pertains to their flowering.
Don't tidy up. That's a good one. do you grow Spirea? I think it's Thunbergii, you know.
Yeah.
Ogon,
the gold leaf.
Yeah, you don't want to cut that back because that foliage is what you're growing it for. It has lovely white flowers early.
Yes.
And they're followed by these sort of needle-like leaves. And Ogon is the gold one, and that's a terrific plant. So that's, and actually Forsythia too. Don't cut back Forsythia. I mean, don't make it, you can cut out the part that's deceased. But when I see a Forsythia ball, I just think, oh, what is going on? And sometimes they have no flowers because the landscaper has made them into meatballs.
Yeah.
Not a good thing for Forsythia. Mm-hmm. But other things, I mean, camellias are kind of self-cleaning, like an oven. The flowers turn brown and they sort of fall off. But you can help that along. You just go to the flowers and just sort of snap them off. And if you need to, you can prune it. But, you know, as we're talking, I'm thinking the general rule, especially for spring flowering things, is you prune them right after they flower. Because right. they're going to need the whole season to prepare to flower again. Some things like hydrangea paniculata make the flower, you know, what they're going to flower with through the season. But the early things, they've made what they're going to use to flower the year before.
Right,
so you really have to prune right after they bloom.
So in our northern gardens, you know, one of the, and this is true everywhere, just the timing is a little different. The best time to prune lilacs, they say, is cut some bouquets and enjoy them indoors, and that's your pruning. You know what I mean? It's at the time or right after, because by, say, July, 2 months later or so, they are already beginning that process toward thinking about setting buds for next year, and certainly by fall there are buds, so you don't want to do it then.
And there's a lot of, should you deadhead lilacs or not deadhead lilacs, and I think that if you let the fruits develop, you really don't get as many flowers. At least I don't. Mm-hmm. So I it's a lot of work, but I do think that, you know, as you said, cut some on the nightstand. That's the best. Some things that have fragrances during the day don't have fragrances at night, but lilacs have fragrances 24/7. Mm-hmm. So cut them and have them on the bedside. And then if you haven't cut them all, then go around and just, you can snap off little fruits as they're forming, which are very easy to see. They're green fruits where the flowers used to be. Or you can take your cicadas or pruners and cut them off. And if you want to prune your lilac, I would prune it down to the first out-facing cluster of leaves. So you want to encourage the shrub to sort of get a vase shape so that the next branch doesn't cross with an inner branch or become congested. You want to open it up. And that's pretty easy to see if you look at it.
So when you prune, in any case, you look to see where the direction, what you're leaving behind is likely to sprout and go in, right? So that you're thinking of the future architecture.
That's mostly true with a shrub that has alternate clusters of leaves, because some of them have, you know, clusters of leaves on both sides. So you can actually remove one and encourage that outfacing growth. Am I getting confused here? That's not so hard to understand.
No. And with the lilacs, the other reason I like to deadhead them, so to speak, is that once those fruits, as you call them, those clusters of green things are brown, they look like hell. Let's just
figure it.
If you have a big floriferous, you know, one that really performed beautifully, and then it has, you know, this mess, ugh, right?
Yeah, but I try to get them while they're green.
Right. So that's right, because it's awful. And I don't want to look at that the rest of the season. And as you say, it may also reduce flowering, you know, some of the energy maybe put into the reproductive ripening of those seeds. But so the long reach pruner, I love the one by the company ARS. I have no affiliation with them, but I just love their pruning tools. ARS, the long reach pruner, you know, it's maybe gives you an extra, well, you can get very long ones, but I have one that's maybe 4 feet and another one that telescopes to 6. So I can get a lot of those, even, you know, 8, 9, 10 feet, 9 feet high. I can get a lot of those deadheads out of a lilac, which is great. Yeah. And it's a lightweight aluminum tool. So it's not, even for me, it's not a hard thing to do. So I love those.
Are you going to put a link?
I can show a picture of it. Yeah, it's a great tool. I mean, those lightweight aluminum long reach pruners are spectacular. I mean, really. And I learned about that from, you know, an arborist years and years and years ago, a professional person who came to help me do some pruning that was above my ability. And I saw the tools that they had, and they were all this lightweight stuff. Duh. I mean, of course, because when you're holding something up in the air, you don't want it to weigh 25 pounds, mm-hmm. right? So anyway. So flowering shrubs. Okay, so we're going to clean up the ones where we think that it may deprive the plant of some of the energy for future, or where it's going to look like hell, as I said before. Mm-hmm. What about conifers? You have some dwarf conifers, don't you?
Yes, I have some dwarf pines, and that's really specific because you can't prune every evergreen conifer. You can't shear them. It has endless dormant buds. Well, you've seen yews that are 500 years old.
You can cut them to the ground practically. It's hilarious. Right, then you'll get a new one. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But if you do that with a pine tree, you have killed the pine tree. You have to have green growth. And really the only thing you can do with a pine, whether it's dwarf so you can reach it, or if you have a ladder, or now a long reach pruner, they have new growth right about now that's maybe 3 to 4 inches long, and they call them candles.
I know, I love that, candles.
Yeah, and they're going to turn into the whirl of sort of feathery growth that if you see on like a white pine, and most pines, well, all pines really have that kind of growth, whether they're short-ish needles or long. And you want to snap those candles in half or leave one third. And it's really almost the only kind of way that you can thicken up the growth on a pine tree.
Right.
Is to snap that candle. And that's usually like, for us, it's about, I don't know, second week in May, something like that.
So it's kind of like pinching, which is another good subject for this time of year, you know, to get. So it's like pinching those candles, that soft growth, before they develop. So pinching is something that a lot of us skip because, you know, spring starts to demand so many chores and we miss it. And whether it's with annuals or with some certain perennials, giving them a little bit of a haircut before they're fully developed, before they're in full stature, and not all of them, but some of them, it can really, like, you don't do this with a lily. you don't do this with a peony. I'm not saying pinch those, but a lot, I mean, you probably know a lot that are good asters, for instance. A lesson I learned about asters, I learned from the woodchucks who love to eat asters, and they love to, you know, they'll be 6 or 8 inches high in May sometime, and then the woodchucks will come in and they chew down all the asters, and I'm like, oh! And then sure enough, it pushes up all this growth and it's kind of bushier and a better stature, not quite so tall.
Right. And, well, and, you know, garden phlox too.
Phlox, exactly. The tall paniculata phlox, right? Mm-hmm. Right. Helenium is another one. What's the name of that sneezeweed or something? Heleniums, those are good.
Yes. Physostigia, the false dragon's teeth.
Is that like obedient? Do they call it obedient plant too? These are all these common names. I don't know the common names as well. Terrible, yeah. even Joe Pieweed, if you have one of the ones that gets really tall and you want it to be a little less tall, you could even pinch that. Mm-hmm. Any others on your list?
Well, I know that people who grow dahlias pinch them, and I have no familiarity with that.
Yeah, my flower farmer friend, Jenny Elliott from Tiny Hearts Farm here in Copaic, New York, she always does. And she says she can hardly think of any, quote, annual. I mean, the dahlia is like more of a bulb type of a thing, tuber. But she can hardly think of any annual she grows for cut flower business that she doesn't pinch. The only ones she could really think of off the top of her head in a conversation we had recently were like the celosias, the ones that get like the brain type of, you know, flower formation. But basically, you know, zinnias and marigolds, everything, cosmos, she says, do really better after a pinching. And what happens is when you wait till something gets to be, I don't know, depending on the thing, 3, 4, 5 inches tall, and in some of the cases of the perennials, it might be a little taller than that, and you take off maybe half the growth, or in the case of the annuals, you go down a bit so that you leave maybe 3 sets of leaves down below. You end up with, it breaks, it goes, it gets more stems, and if you're a cut flower grower, more stems is a good thing, and stronger stems, right? Not one or two big spindly things, but a more bushy with lots of flowers being offered. So that's kind of good.
Well, and if you're growing a lot of herbs. You can do that too, and you don't have to cut them in half or cut them way back. You can just actually take your fingernails and cut the newest growth, and then the little dormant buds along the axils where the leaves are will wake up, and that's what turns into a bushy plant. With a begonia, you want to do that with almost every begonia.
Hmm.
You know, if you're growing the fibrous begonias in a pot or something.
Right. But again, you know, you don't pinch a day lily. You don't pinch a true lily. You don't pinch, I don't think you pinch, you don't pinch ornamental grasses, peonies, the, you know, the bearded iris, the irises. The phlox is such a great example because almost everyone can visualize when a clump of phlox comes up out of the ground. You know, if it's been in the ground a while, there's 100 or more little shoots, right, in a close mm-hmm. proximity. And so you can imagine, you know, that that's the type of thing. And asters are like that. You know, they send up a lot and so forth, a lot of these daisy-like plants as well. So I've even read that you can do it with Russian sage, Perovskia. Is that right? I've never done it with that.
No.
And then there's the other form of, it's not pinching, but it's sort of more deadheading or shearing that comes later. So some of the earlier perennials will have gone by, and then some of the ones will go by in like late May and June. And if you don't deal with them, the garden can really look like hell in July and August. You know, like catmint or the euphorbias, or, you know, it's nice to give them a cutback after they finish blooming, right?
And some of those things will bloom again if you cut them back.
Right. I think the nepetas, the catmints, will sometimes, right?
Right.
Yeah. I do it with my perennial geraniums, my geranium macrorhizum that I use as a ground cover. After it finishes blooming, I really shear it. I use head shears. I get down low and I clip with head shears because it's too hard to do miles of it otherwise, you know, with just a pruner, one at a time.
So then it gets thickened up, sort of?
Yes, and it doesn't get quite as tall, but in a way that's better because it doesn't kind of flop over onto things adjacent to it and so forth. So no, it just keeps it tighter and nicer, and I don't have the spent flowers sticking up above the foliage. So rather than literally deadheading, pinching off one of 1,000 flowers, you know, one every 6 or 10 inches around a huge sea of these things under some big shrub borders, I just take the hedge clippers and do it wholesale. It looks like, wow. Speaking of things that look like hell, folks, after you do them, and I sometimes say that, you know, to make the garden last, you kind of have to make it a mess for a minute. So in 2 weeks, it'll look better as long as you water well after you do it. So
my brain is swimming.
Yeah.
There's a lot to do.
Yeah. So no, we have a couple few more minutes left. And I just wondered, you know, other things that you think of that help you make your garden keep going, you know,
in the other years, you would go to the garden center and get things on sale and plug them in.
Right.
And maybe it's something, if you are going to get some plants from the garden center, even in your drive-by pickup, you might think of some things that may not be in flower, but will be to plug in. We see these beautiful perennial borders and we think, oh, how come our perennial border doesn't look like that? Well, they're taking out some of the bad things and replacing them with some good things. You know, sometimes when you do have tours, sometimes I put things in pots in bloom, just stick them in.
And you know, I used to say, hosta pot, why not? In other words, if I don't have something for a particular pot, and I do a lot of pot arrangements in sort of semi-shady or bright shady areas near the house. And, you know, I mean, maybe I don't want to go and buy $50 worth of something anyway, even if the garden center were open, to fill a pot. And sometimes I've taken my divisions from hostas, you know, and I've plunked them in there and it looks great. It looks
great in a pot. Idea.
Do you know what I mean? It's architectural. It's especially the bigger ones, you know. So a young shrub, a shrub that you're going to buy for the garden, but don't plant it till the fall. Put it in a pot this spring and summer, right? I mean, improvise, I think.
Well, there's so much we can talk about. I know we don't have time, and like, you know, cool season plants to start from seed later on. And what about all those house plants you're repotting and taking outside? We'll have to talk about house plants at some point.
We will. Are you going to force me?
They will force us.
Yours have a much better life over there in your solarium than mine have here.
Where you summer the houseplants outside.
Yeah, it is good.
That's beautiful.
True. All right.
It's sort of an introduction to your whole garden. I love it.
It's a deal. It's a deal. All right. Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Ken. And like I said last time, I miss you. So.
Oh.
All right. I'll see you soon. Okay. Yeah. All right. Bye-bye.
Programming and underwriting support from Garden Tool Company. Garden Tool Company's wide selection of heirloom quality tools for your gardening passion is backed by outstanding customer service, fast shipping, and ongoing support. GardenToolCompany.com. Programming and underwriting support from Brushwood Nursery. For more than 20 years, Brushwood Nursery has shipped the finest selection of clematis and other vines all over the United States with full gallon-sized plant and free shipping. Their website is full of beautiful pictures and information on growing clematis. BrushwoodNursery.com.
Thanks to all of you for tuning in too, and don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of this show on Stitcher or iTunes or Spotify, and you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or at Facebook or Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.